You're listening to The Impromptu on the Hologram Radio Network, a multifaceted show discussing how technology, art, design, and equality converge on topics that matter most to us. From gaming culture to film and other forms of media, we examine the creative process and how the decisions we make shape our perceptions and lives. This is Alex Knight, and I am joined by Michael Norton. Episode 99, HomePod Firmware Boffins. This week on The Impromptu, a plethora of information has been unearthed from Apple's HomePod firmware. Someone at Apple has done something incredibly silly that I'm sure they're now regretting, which has allowed us, well, mainly Michael, to peek into the firmware and unearth a ton of information about the iPhone 8. And we now know more than we've ever known before. So this might go down in history as the biggest secrecy screw-up at that company. So stay tuned for that discussion that's coming up next on The Impromptu.
Apple's made a critical error, and the time for our attack has come. The data brought to us by the HomePod firmware pinpointed the exact definition of the iPhone 8. Many Boffins died to bring us this information. Or one Apple employee. So what happened on Friday was that somebody accidentally released HomePod firmware to the public release channel, not the internal release channel. This was an internal dev build. All of the ifdefs were turned off. So the flags that basically say, if this goes public, you will die. Well, more accurately, if public, do not show under any circumstances.
No one died that we know of, but no. It sounds like it might be a firing offense.
Oh, yes, absolutely a firing offense, or at least heavy probation, never allowed to touch the release channels ever again, etc. So yeah, somebody screwed up badly. An entire, completely unsecure firmware was released with method calls, functions, strings, properties, you name it, including a passbook glyph that shows a very familiar iPhone design. It shows an iPhone that has a screen that covers the entire front of the device with a tiny notch at the top for the camera and sensors, exactly as we've seen this entire time.
And we'll put a link to all of the stuff that we talked about, all of the discoveries in the show notes, of course. That notch looked a little big, though.
Yeah, well, it's a glyph. It's not meant to be an accurate portrayal of the phone, but it confirms that the design we've been seeing for the past 3 to 6 months is, in fact, the design. The schematics were correct. This is the phone. Moving forward, there is reference to a new biometric security protocol, codenamed Pearl. Now, it's not quite as simple as that. I found multiple references in the code. I actually managed to get a copy of all of the strings, and I looked through them the other day and found a number of things that haven't been talked about yet. Pearl seems to be Apple's internal codename for the entire hardware kit that's going to be in the new iPhone, centered around augmented reality and facial recognition. So on the front camera, Pearl is a infrared sensor that enables high-res point cloud data for your face. And that's tied into a number of protocols connected to biometric kit. And biometric kit, of course, currently has Touch ID inside it. So this will be a new protocol within biometric kit. And it contains computed face data, face landmarks, and each of those has a vast number of properties around the size of your eyes, the distance between your eyes, your neck, your teeth, your irises, just a ton of little details about the shape of your face that all get collated, presumably, into some sort of encrypted model of your face. And that bears out because there's also reference to PS Perl Enroll Controller and PS Perl Enroll View. So that suggests that there is a view and a controller for setting up a face. There's reference to BioCapture Complete, Tutorial Movie View, Pitch Correction, Yaw Correction, a number of other events, success, failure, all kinds of stuff. It basically sounds like this is the new iPhone's version of how you set up Touch ID on any previous device. So the whole thing where it shows you the graphic of the fingerprint, and as you tap the home button, more of it fills in. So this will be a little different. I also found reference to LAUI Perl Glyph View, which sounds like it's a SceneKit 3D object. So my best guess is it will look kind of crazy and a little bit futuristic. You'll basically get a view of the front camera, I think, and it'll prompt you to move the phone around your face at different angles. So like maybe start by pointing it up at your forehead and then just slowly move your phone down and then to the left and then to the right, mm-hmm. that kind of thing. And as you do that, I think it'll actually fill in a 3D model of your head. And then once it succeeds, that accurate 3D model of your face will be stored on the secure enclave and used to authenticate for everything from unlocking your phone to Apple Pay to buying an app on the App Store. There is reference to using Face ID, as I'm going to call it, with purchases. So there is reference to, where is it? Payment Contactless Interface Perl Field Detect Presentation. So that suggests that there will be a version of the Face ID unlock that appears within range of a point of sale terminal. So as you move the phone towards a debit or credit machine, Face ID will activate. So this is effectively replacing Touch ID completely. Now, obviously, Apple is not going to make this shift lightly. They're not going to get rid of Touch ID unless Face ID is just as good, if not better. And I believe that with the infrared sensor, it will be. And also in the code, it sounds like the front camera is going to be upgraded to shoot 4K video. So it's going
to
get...
That's really impressive to have 4K on both of those cameras.
Yes.
And this actually, I think that'll be a monumental thing for the iPhone. And I think for smartphones in general, because there have always been a disparity between the front and the back because of the limited... I think, correct me if I'm wrong, but one of the reasons why Apple just doesn't stick the best possible camera in the front as well was because of the limited space in the chassis. It was a design restraint, I guess.
Yeah. However, this phone is actually thicker than the iPhone 7. So there is room for it. When you say thicker,
I mean realistically probably a hair.
Oh, yeah.
But just enough.
Very slightly.
Right, just enough to get that lens in there.
Pretty much. And I feel this changes out of necessity. A higher res camera on the front means a more defined facial scan. So higher res textures, a better ability to identify unique features on your face to collate with the infrared scan data. So, both of those things in concert will work together to create a much more accurate view of what your face looks like. So I think Apple's doing it out of necessity for that functionality.
Right, right.
It'll probably be a wider lens camera so that The references I found to pitch correction and yaw correction suggest that it will make you put the phone at odd angles when scanning your face. For example, one thing that I know the PS4 does with the PS camera, when you're setting up facial recognition login for the PS4 with the camera, it actually makes you turn your head left, right, up, down, so that it can kind of identify your face, even if you're only slightly glancing at it. So I think the effect will be the same with the iPhone. So for anyone worried that you're going to have to point the camera directly in front of your face in order to pay for something or to unlock the phone, I wouldn't be too worried about that.
I'm glad you mentioned that, because actually that was exactly what I was concerned about when you were describing it that way. And I guess this would have to be part of the onboarding experience when you set up a new phone, right?
Yes.
You know, it always asks, you know, to position your phone.
Right. So, that's this Pearl Enroll view that I found.
Oh, I see. Okay.
So that'll be how it sets it up. It'll explain how to do it. It'll run you through like scanning your face, and it'll be this like glitzy, super cool 3D thing.
I mean, it's not exactly like putting your thumbprint on the Touch ID sensor is an inconvenience in order to electronically pay for something.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure where they're going with that.
Okay, so the reason I think they're moving to facial ID is because it is much harder to bypass. You might be able to fake having a fingerprint, and even that is pretty difficult because you have to get physical access to the person. But a facial scan with infrared sensors, there is no way to bypass that. It has to be you.
The thing is that there were already proof of concepts that they could bypass the Touch ID sensor when a Touch ID sensor was first, when it first came out. But again, like you said, you know, you need someone's fingerprint.
Yeah.
You need to lift it. And I think they use like a super expensive high resolution scanner to do that, which is just not practical.
And then
is it possible? Yes.
It's possible. Yeah.
And same with the facial stuff. It may be possible, but
highly unlikely.
I'm always skeptical just because facial recognition has been attempted so many times in the past and it's always been really crappy.
Yes. Mostly because early systems used very rudimentary image recognition software. This is much more highly sophisticated. So you've got a 4K front camera, an infrared sensor, building a high-res point cloud scan of your face. So this is kind of similar to the technology they use to do performance capture for Hollywood movies or for video games. So not only will it know what you look like, it will know the exact contours of your face.
Right.
It's not just basing
it on an outline of your face. It's actually making a grid.
Yes.
And I basically, like you're saying, like it's like a landscape. It's grabbing every single point on your face.
Yeah. Every wrinkle, every frown line, everything.
Oh, I'm looking forward to that.
So then combine that with the encryption on the secure enclave, and you've got something almost impossible to fool. Because a picture will not work, because the infrared scanner will say, this is a flat surface, this is not a person. So you can't bypass it that way. You can try to use one of those hyperreal masks, but I'm willing to bet that the infrared sensor will see through that too, because it's probably specifically architected to detect the difference between skin and whatever material those masks are made of. So if it can distinguish that, there's no way. Like, there is literally no way to bypass this biometric security unless you have the person sit in front of their phone. So that is vastly more secure.
Of course.
And it doesn't require you to put your finger on a specific part of the phone. Obviously, it's going to be a little disappointing that they weren't able to put Touch ID inside the screen. Maybe they considered it. Maybe there were a bunch of reasons. ultimately they decided to go with this new technology. Naturally, they wouldn't have done this if they didn't have good reasons. And
I mean, for those listening, like, we need to explain that to most people that are intelligent. I mean, Apple is not Apple, the kind of,
yeah.
When, I mean, you just have to look at historical product releases. When have they ever released something that was kind of a botched job or like a half-assed implementation? They're not Samsung.
No.
They're not going to do that. I'm not saying they're perfect, but, you know, they have a pretty solid track record of implementing things that, for the most part, are pretty well thought out.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, that's Pearl. There is also reference to Pearl being on the back camera and a property called Pearl Depth Data. So that seemingly confirms the fact that the back camera is going to have a time of flight AR sensor, meaning, as we discussed last week, the phone will be able to read the environment around it. And AR objects can actually sit on physical objects because the phone will have an understanding of the shape of a room. You might even be able to use it to scan your house or whatever, and it'll remember all of those details. And then to combine with the back camera being 4K 60, there is also reference to modern HDR supported. And what I think that means is not only will the camera shoot 4K video at 60 frames a second, it'll shoot 4K HDR video at 60 frames a second, which will be perfect for the new 4K HDR Apple TV that is supposedly coming out by the end of the year.
So 4K has been in iPhones for a while, I believe since the 6S.
Yes.
HDR is not supported on the 7?
No. You can shoot 4K, but not 4K HDR.
Right.
You
and
can
what about
take
the frame
HDR
rate?
Photos. Currently, the frame rate is 30.
Okay, so same 4K. As the 6S.
Yeah.
But that's so, getting a bump, supposedly.
Yes. So in the code, it says, is back 4K 60 video supported? There's also reference to, is front 4K 60 video supported? So in theory, both cameras will be 4K 60. So that means the front camera will be getting a resolution upgrade to 12 megapixel, which isn't outside the realm of possibility. I mean, at this point, those sensors are fairly cheap.
Yeah.
They could easily just put in like the 6S, or no, probably not the 6S.
What does it take to handle 60 frame rates per second at that kind of resolution?
So,
like, I don't know where in the hardware, like, what is actually doing that processing?
Yeah, so that would be the image processing unit in the A-series chip. So Apple has a dedicated custom pipeline for image processing. It's basically a subprocessor inside the system on a chip that has been custom designed by Apple to work hand-in-hand with the camera software. And obviously, currently, even with the A10 chip, shooting 4K 60, like, the bit rate is just too high for the processor to handle. But with the A11 chip, which is going to be 20 to 30% faster than the A10X, which is already faster than most MacBook Pros, like, just stop and think about that for a minute. The new iPhone is going to have a CPU that is 20 to 30% faster than a chip that is already faster than a lot of MacBook Pros, including last year's MacBook Pros. So,
yeah, I mean,
it'll be able to handle it.
It's very impressive.
Yeah. So, obviously, to go with all of that insane power, they have come up with a new image processing chip that allows for 4K at 60 frames a second, because finally they can handle the bitrate in real time. Because the thing is, a computer doesn't have to shoot video like that. It plays it back, it can edit it and export it in a different format, but it never has to record it in real time. The phone, however, has to be able to handle that throughput. And not only the throughput, but it also has to save it to the new HEVC file format. So not only is it recording, it's also transcoding as it's recording. So this is a super dedicated pipeline, especially when you're trying to run everything else on the phone in the background. Like, there's a reason RED cameras and DSLRs, all they do is shoot photo and video, because you need the processing power to be able to do that. And I mean, a lot of DSLRs can't even handle 4K 60. Like, you...
Well, RED cameras, I mean...
RED cameras, they easily...
Shoot higher, for a while now, for years, they've shot higher than 4K.
Yeah.
I think you can do 8K or something crazy on the, like, highest-end models.
The high-end RED's can do, like, 8K 60 easily. But that's all they do.
Right. They do one thing well. That's it.
This is a phone that does 1,000 other things at the same time.
Which actually makes the iPhone look more impressive when you think about it.
Yeah.
Right? All the stuff that this thing can do now.
Exactly. And no lag.
Right.
Like, that's the key thing. Not only is it shooting 4K 60, but it's also receiving emails and messages and 100 other things that are happening in the background as it's recording the video and then saving it as a lossless video format. So, I mean, yeah, it's doing a lot. So anyways, moving past all the camera stuff, we then have some other minor things. So another thing that was reported was that UI status bar now has a split mode. So the status bar at the top, the one that shows carrier information, battery life, the time, it now has a mode called split, which makes perfect sense because the design of the new phone has that notch at the top that separates the left and half sides of the top of the display. So if you have a split status bar, that means that it is split to either side of that notch. So at the top of the phone, where the camera is, to the left and right, you're going to have battery and carrier information and Wi-Fi and all that stuff. The clock will go away because it's currently in the middle where right. the notch gonna is
say,
going to be.
I was just going to say, when they need to redesign that status bar?
Yes. It's not clear exactly what it's going to look like, and it's not clear if the clock will go somewhere else, but for all intents and
purposes...
What
do you need to look at the time for all the time? Just stop it.
I don't know. Somebody had a clever idea that it would go in the center of the home button, but that's kind of ridiculous. Anyways, there's also a ton of stuff about portrait mode. So it looks like portrait mode is getting a big upgrade in iOS 11 for the new iPhone. There's reference to a number of portrait effects with various sub-features like shadow refine, prepared depth, face vignette, eye brighten soft light, and whiten teeth.
Hmm. Do one of those make me look 10 years younger?
Possibly, yes. So the portrait mode, I think, does a bunch of like automatic tweaks to make your portrait look really, really good. And obviously with the new AR sensor, it's not just using AI anymore to blur what's behind the subject. It can now physically see the subject and the background. So it'll be able to do a much more intelligent blur of what's behind the subject, because now it can actually see in 3D what's happening in the scene. There also seems to be a massive upgrade to the iPhone's computer vision. Camera is getting a series of features referred to in the code as Smart Cam. So it's going to be able to detect various scenes and change camera settings accordingly. So for example, it's able to detect a sunrise or a sunset and turn on HDR if you're taking a photo of a sunrise or a sunset. There's also a setting called freeze motion related to detecting a baby, a pet, or I forget what the other thing was, but that sounds like it's going to increase the shutter speed if you're taking a photo of one of those things. so that you can get the perfect action shot. So if your dog's running around or whatever, you point your camera at your dog as it's running around. And once you snap that photo, it's at a much higher shutter speed so that instead of a mad blur in the middle of your shot, you actually get a freeze frame of your dog. And it'll do that all intelligently in real time, seemingly, according to this section of the code. So that'll probably all be thanks to a bunch of new hardware. Like, you've got the AR sensor, you've got the new camera. Theoretically, you've also got the Apple Neural Engine in the mix, the N1 chip.
The camera processing stuff, does it have its own separate chip? Because I don't remember if it did or if that was handled by the A-series chip.
It's a separate chip inside the A-series
chip. I see. So it's just doing the A-series pipeline processing.
Like, the A-series chip, when you go inside there, there's a bunch of cores, there's a bunch of other little chips, like the M1, which records like the gyroscopic data. They've added a number of subprocessors over the years.
Right. No, I'm familiar with the M1, but I keep forgetting that it's one system on a chip. So it's all these little chips, basically one compressed little package.
Yeah. So, I mean, you've got the CPU, the GPU, and then you've got the M chip, the image processing chip, the secure enclave, and whatever else they've added over the years. So yeah, that pretty much covers it so far.
That's a lot. And it's funny because over the last, I think, month, as we've sort of slowly been talking more and more about iPhone 8 and what we might see, we've talked about how, well, you know, we're getting so close now. There's not, it felt for a while like, really, how much more can we possibly talk about it? But now suddenly this, you know, the floodgates have opened and now there's all this information floating around here. But basically, to summarize, this is going to be a bigger upgrade than at least what I thought it would be. Like the OLED screen I knew would be like a major like breakthrough.
Yeah.
It would be a nice upgrade. But now that you're telling me that it's possibly having a 4K camera, it looks very, very possible now.
Mm-hmm.
It has a 4K camera on both the front and the back. All these things added up. I mean, this is going to be probably the biggest iPhone upgrade ever.
Yes. Yeah, pretty much.
So this is the 10th anniversary release, effectively, of the iPhone. So
yeah, exactly.
What better way to celebrate 10 years of iPhone by having this massive upgrade?
Yeah, precisely.
And also to quell all of the complaints over the years of Apple can't innovate, the iPhone year over year keeps looking the exact same. It's not new, it doesn't do anything new.
Oh, you just wait and see. Now we know. So actually, on that note, there are a few other ancillary pieces of information. So in the code, there's reference to a D21 and a D22. So those are internal model numbers for new iPhones. The D10 was the iPhone 7 and the D11 was the 7 Plus. So there was a rumor that said there were going to be three iPhones, the 7S, 7S Plus, and the Pro, or the 8. And they would have the model numbers D20, D21, and D22. Now, in the code, there is no D20 at all. And we know for a fact that D22 is the iPhone 8, also codenamed Ferrari. So
there's no third phone then.
Exactly.
That's got to be what it is.
So basically, there is a very good chance there never was a 7S at all. And in fact,
so some this kind entire of misdirection.
Time, yes, this entire time, the 7S was effectively that old rumor before the iPad was announced that the iPad would cost $1,000. And then they got up on stage, $599, and everyone lost it. So I think it's something similar. I think Apple hedged their bets. They realized that they might not be able to get as much of a supply as they would like. So they kind of spread this notion that the 8 was going to be this rarefied luxury model, when in fact they were trying to make as many of them as humanly possible to surprise and shock everyone with, No, that was never going to happen. The crazy new design is the only iPhone. I mean, I could still be wrong. We still have a month to go.
Is the case, does that mean, I understand not having the 7S, but does that mean that we are not even going to have a smaller sized screen version of the iPhone 8? There's just one iPhone now that has the bigger screen?
Well, there's still two model numbers, don't forget.
Okay.
There's D21 and D22.
One of those has to be a 4.7 inch or whatever similar size.
Is also reference in the code to a 6.5 inch iPhone, which is strange. So
that would be bigger than any iPhone that exists now.
Unless it's using the 8 design. A 6.5 inch screen using the 8 design would actually fit on the Plus chassis. I did the math on that a while ago. But not 100%. Certain. So far, the only solid evidence we have is for the 8. So a 5.8 inch device with a chassis slightly bigger than the 7, slightly thicker, longer home button. Like, that is the only phone we have seen evidence for. No parts have leaked. All we've seen are schematics, code details, model numbers for this one single phone. And we're only a month away from them announcing something. So either Apple has done the best / worst job at hiding all of their secrets, or this is the only phone that exists. There is no 7S. There is no 8 Plus. There is just this single device that, if I had to bet, they will just call iPhone. 10th anniversary. Iconic new design, amazing new features. They just break the numbers apart. This is the new iPhone.
They did that for iPad too, right? Right. There's no iPad 5, 6. I mean,
the iPad was kind of weird though, the way they did
that. But I mean,
that.
Like, if you go to the website now, isn't it just called iPad?
It is.
Right? They got rid of those numbers.
And then you have the iPad Pro.
So this is way less confusing for iPhone if they just get rid of the numbers.
Yeah.
Too.
It's possible.
It's cleaner too.
Yeah.
Just it iPhone. Is. This is a new iPhone.
But I feel like this is the right time for it because it's like a huge upgrade. iPad, they just kind of did it nonchalantly, which confused a lot of people. But with this, I think it feels right because they're so fundamentally changing what the iPhone looks like, how the iPhone works. Touch ID is being replaced with Face ID. You're getting all of these crazy new AR features, the new OLED screen, all of the changes that that's going to bring to iOS in general. It's just a huge shift. But like I said, maybe they're just really, really good at covering their tracks. And this is the only device that's happened to leak because everyone's been so focused on the new one that they've not looked at the 7S.
I gotta say, that would be a ballsy move though, because as we've discussed about pricing ad nauseum, to only have that the new iPhone, as the one model that they sell, that now is more expensive?
Well, I mean, if it's the only phone, I don't think it'll be that much more expensive. I think it's probably going to be Plus pricing, maybe slightly cheaper or slightly more expensive. Like, it'll probably be on a sliding scale. Ultimately, there's another piece of news that was also announced today that does a lot to confirm my suspicion that this is in fact the only phone that exists for this year. And that is that Samsung has apparently ramped up their OLED factories by 700% just for Apple. 6 out of 7 of their next gen OLED factories have apparently been ramped up specifically for Apple orders.
This is good news.
And the article goes on to say that at 100% yield, at 100% capacity, those factories are capable of churning out 130 OLED panels by the time the iPhone is supposed to come out. Now, currently the factories only operate at 60% yield, which is still somewhat high, translates to 76 million panels. Now, earlier in the year, there was a report that Apple had issued an order for 70 million OLED panels from Samsung. That is an iPhone launch-sized number of display panels. Like, not just one model, every iPhone. Like, that is how many iPhones they sell when they ship a new iPhone. Actually, a lot more. Normally, it's around 50 million. So you might be able to lie and obfuscate and misinform and spread rumors about other phones and other things, but you can't hide ordering an entire launch worth of OLED panels. So I think that is the piece of news to really latch onto. Because Apple, if they were only making 10 or 20 million iPhone 8s next to 50 million iPhone 7Ss, would they have ordered 70 million OLED panels?
No, I think that pretty much debunks it. And it's what I think my suspicions were, that, which, you know, we argued these points, was do they not want to have the best possible representation of what their design is at that moment in time?
Yeah.
And to me, anything else that detracts that, like the 7S, would do them a disservice. Regardless of the premium price, I think Apple wants the world to know that they make the best smartphones, and that this is where you go to get it. So it does make sense that now that this information is out about the OLED order, that they want to make as many as these as they can, and they're expecting to sell a lot of them.
Yeah, clearly.
And they'll probably, I'm sure, you know, come the I guess December will be what, Q4?
No, Q1. They just had their quarter four earnings call.
So when they do their earnings call, I'm sure they'll have a lot of good news to say about what the new iPhone sales will be.
Oh, yeah.
At that point.
Yeah.
So this is good. So that means potentially, maybe from the consumer standpoint, the chance of getting your hands on this phone might not be as difficult as maybe we think. I guess it all depends on how much the media pumps it up and how much the demand is, right?
Well, I think at 70 million, I think they've adequately assumed the demand that will occur for the phone. Like, I would expect that they'll run out of initial pre-order supplies in no time at all, but there will be phones in stores on launch day. Past that, they might be constrained a little, but the way I see it, Samsung is going to keep churning panels out. So Apple will continue to be able to manufacture more units. And then in the new year, they've got deals with LG, Sharp, Foxconn, and Japan Display to shore up that supply. So moving into 2018, they're going to have way more access to OLED panels moving forward. So Samsung won't have to shoulder this heavy burden for super long. Like, it's really just for the launch window. And then moving into next year, they're going to have all of this additional supply open up. So at that point, we're not just talking OLED on the iPhone. We're talking OLED on Apple Watch, OLED on the iPad, possibly. I mean, with all of these new suppliers coming into the market, the economy of scale will bring the prices on those panels down. And we could be seeing an OLED iPad next year,
right,
or the year after, feasibly.
And hopefully, now, obviously, it's very clear they want to move to OLED for everything. The OLED the OLED touch bar on the MacBook Pro should come down in price, hopefully, by next year, if all goes well. That is, if they have moved to AMOLED by next year, which I'm not sure if they're ready for that yet.
Yeah, I mean, that could still be 2 or 3 years down the line, in which case moving to OLED is going to provide a lot of benefit to them in the short term.
Yeah, because at the rate that they're ramping up OLED production now, I don't want to beat this to death, but my gut is telling me that maybe next year is just too early, considering how many they're making now of OLED screens.
Yeah, so I think AMOLED is probably still a few years out, so they're going with OLED for now until they can make it work. There are other vendors working on AMOLED. Samsung just bought one because I think they've seen the writing on the wall. But Apple's had LuxView working on AMOLED for a while. So it's only a matter of time before it becomes ready. But until then, I think OLED is a reasonable investment just because it provides way too many benefits over LED. So yeah, I think we'll probably see a lot of devices transition to OLED over the next few years just because they've got all these suppliers lined up. iMac probably the last to go because those panels will be insanely expensive. Like,
well, they're only 27 inches, Michael. I mean, what's the big deal, right?
Like a 40-inch OLED 4K TV is like,
they're
what,
crazy
$16,000?
Yeah, they're crazy expensive. Yeah.
So good luck.
Yeah. So in summation, what have we learned about Apple secrecy and doubling down on that?
It can all be destroyed by one engineer pressing the wrong button. And the iPhone 8 or the iPhone or whatever it's called is shaping up to be a pretty awesome phone. And it's looking increasingly likely that it is the only new phone and possibly a new iPhone SE that's made in India. But that's a whole other thing. That's another tidbit from today. There might be a new SE with an A10 manufactured in India by Wistron. But new iPhone. It's going to be awesome.
You've been listening to the Impromptu One Hologram Radio. I'm Alex Knight, joined by Michael Norton, as always. If you'd like to show your support for this podcast and the work that we do here, the single best way to do that is to go to patreon.com/hologramradio and donate today. Subscribe to the podcast on iTunes to ensure you get every new episode each and every week. And do leave us a review if you have a moment that makes us feel good, as well as helps other people find the podcast. We're also available in Google Play Music, TuneIn, and Stitcher as well if you'd like to stream it there, and wherever else you can find podcasts. You can follow us on Twitter. We're at The Impromptu. Michael Norton is at Zen Impulse. I'm at Zero Distraction. And if you'd like to send us feedback the old-fashioned way, you can email us at theimpromptu@hologramradio.org, and that will go to both myself and Michael.
And on that note, thanks for listening, everyone. See you next time.